don't really see anyone in the audience that isn't aware of the debate format, but I will just go ahead and say it anyway in case I miss someone. Tonight, I am in the driver's seat of this particular debate, and Michael will have to throw arrows at my argumentation for this. And this week, what I'm going to be saying is the covering from 1 Corinthians, the 11th chapter, is that a woman's long hair is given to her for the covering. Again, the emphasis is on long hair. I know there are some questions about that, and I will try to address some of those things throughout the night, and I'm sure Michael's got some questions, because Michael's argumentation is also for long hair. And so whether you take the position in which I am defending or you take the position in which he is defending, both positions have long hair involved and included in them. So several have already, or at least one has already asked me some questions about that. And I'll try to say a few things about that, and Michael may as well. Let me tell you why 1 Corinthians 11 is saying that the long hair is the covering of a female. I want you to look down in 1 Corinthians 11. We looked at this text very closely last week. I want you to look down again in verse 15. Then in verses 13 and 14, we've been seeing this idea that it is not natural for a man to have long hair. And verse 15, if a woman has long hair, it is a glory for her, for her hair is given to her as or for a covering. We'll get there in a second, but that is where the phrase is coming from. Her hair is given to her for a covering. We've already seen that it is shameful for a woman. It is dishonorable for a woman to pray or prophesy with her head uncovered, and vice versa. It is wrong, shameful for a man to pray with his head covered. Now, Michael last week tried to say that it was inferred and it was necessary that there are two coverings being included. That there is the long hair that is being included in verse 15, and there is another covering, as he called an artificial covering, in verses 3, 4, and 5. But here's where I want you to understand. The only noun for covering that we have in 1 Corinthians 11 is verse 15, where it says, her hair is given to her for a covering. That is the only noun. So we understand parts of speech, right? A thing, a noun is a person, place, or thing. These other phrases where the term covered or uncovered is used, it is either an adjective or a verb. And I want you to notice this. I want you to look in verse 5 here of chapter 11. But every woman who has her head uncovered. That is an adjective. So you're looking at a woman and she doesn't have something on her head or she is uncovered. That is just describing her. It is just describing that she is uncovered. It is not implying that she has to have something additional on her head. It is just describing that whatever state she is in, she is uncovered. It is the same thing in verse 13. Here, where he asks the question, is it proper for a woman to pray to God uncovered? Again, he is just describing her, that she is uncovered in some way. Or you have the verb usage of this. Look in verse 6 here of 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 6. If a woman does not cover her head, that is the act of covering. So it would be, she could cover her head. That is the verb. And then verse 7, the same thing. A man ought not to have his head covered. Again, it is a verb. It is not a noun. It is not saying that there is a covering, but that they need to either be covered or uncovered. And they need to not cover themselves. Let me say it that way. The man does not need to cover himself. So what do they cover themselves with? See, they make the argument and the implication that because you need to cover means it has to be something that can be artificially placed over it, such as a veil or something along those lines. But our context gives us the noun. Our context tells us what the covering is, and that is verse 15. Is not the long hair the glory for the woman? Her hair is given to her for a covering. That is the only noun that is used in this text. Now, here's what I'm going to say, and here's what I'm going to grant. It is a different word that he is using there in verse 15 for covering. It is not of the same family, but it is the word for a veil. It is not the typical word for a veil. Let me say it that way. I want you to look at the typical word for a veil. I want you to look in 2 Corinthians chapter 3. James, how much time do I have? Okay. In 2 Corinthians chapter 3, you remember that story about Moses going up on the mountain and his face was all glorious and beaming and he had to cover his face with a veil? I want you to notice how this is the typical word, apparently, in verse 13, that Moses, who used to put a veil over his face. That's our normal word for veil, right? It's the same thing. You'd see it in verse 14. Their minds were hardened until this very day, reading at the covenant, and the same veil. Okay, there's our same, there's our usual word. Verse 15. But to this day, whenever Moses is read, a veil, normal word, is over their hearts. And same thing in verse 16. Whenever a person turns to the Lord, the veil, the noun, is taken away. There's your typical usage of the word veil, something that covers in this way. But the word that we have used back in 1 Corinthians chapter 11 is a word that is usually the idea of a mantle. But it, apparently, according to Thayer in his lexicon of Greek words, he says it is a covering that is thrown around. It is a wrapper. And not like a wrapper, but something that you wrap around. That would be different than a veil that is just hanging over the top, but rather this is implying something that would be wrapped around. And so it has been suggested that what can you wrap if the hair is long? What can you wrap around you? You can wrap the hair, a ponytail, or the hair around you, and that shows a covering. Now, I don't know that that is 100% the idea there, is that the hair has to be able to wrap around the face of an individual. But let's say for a second that that is the long hair, that the hair must be able to wrap around. That would indicate whether or not I have long hair or whether I have shorter hair. And so you would see a lot of different things. Now, I'm going to go in a second, and I just want you to notice that the implication that is made is that, again, back in verse 4 and verse 5, this idea that someone needs to be covered in the verb form means to cover the face or the head with some garment. That is used in the Old Testament. You would see that in Genesis chapter 38 and verse 15, that when Tamar, you remember Judah's daughter-in-law, she hid herself. It says there in Genesis 38, she had her face covered. She disguised herself in some way. And the same thing with Mordecai when he is mourning in Esther chapter 6 and verse 12, having his head covered, the text says. But neither of those texts tell us what they covered their face with. So, in the Greek usage, apparently, of the Old Testament, what they call the Septuagint version, we see that this word for covering is much more generic than a veil. It can be literally anything that covers, okay? So I want you to notice how it's used in a couple places. Exodus 29 and verse 22, when they're giving instructions about the sacrifices, the fat that covers the entrails. That same phrase is used in Leviticus chapter 3 and verse 3. Leviticus chapter 3 and verse 9, chapter 4 of Leviticus and verse 8. Now, that's a lot of information, but let me say what it's saying. It says specifically in that text, the thing that covers is what? The fat. It is specific about that. And that's my time. I'll have to go with that for the moment. Thank you.
Look deeper into the language there, grammatically. With her head uncovered in verse 5. Utilizes a compound word, just one. That whole phrase, one word. A compound word that literally means without a veil or covering or something that's understood to be a veil or covering that is put on or literally in a different tense here to her head. So it's applying something to the head. All right, thank you. Man-made veil or covering. So note, if you take the covering in both instances, as Wes does, to be the natural covering of the hair, that is, the long hair, then you have this text saying, but every woman praying or prophesying with her head uncovered, that is, to have short hair or shorn hair or shaven hair, is one and the same with having been shaven. It's redundant. And you would literally have Paul saying, every woman with hair shorter than long is one and the same as having it shaven the shortest it can be. Now, let's stay with that for a second, because he emphasizes in verse 6. In verse 6, we look at the verse, for if the woman is not covered, let her also be shorn. But if it is a shame for a woman to be shorn or shaven, let her be covered. The literal translation is, for if a woman does not cover her hair, let her also, in addition, be shorn. But it is shameful for a woman to be shorn or shaven, then let her cover her head. I think the natural understanding here is if a woman does not cover her head, that is, put something on it, a veil or covering, let her also then cut her hair short or be shorn. Let's look deeper into the language. Because in the language itself, the word also is very important. It is your same word for and that you find in Acts 2:38. Repent and be baptized. Those are two things. Mark 16:16, believe and be baptized. Those are two things, not one. And it is arguing for something additional. That is, here, it's arguing for a natural and a man-made, artificial, whatever you want to call it, but an additional covering. And notice, if you take this covering to be only the natural covering of the hair, that is, long hair, you would literally have Paul saying this in verse 6. If a woman does not cover her head, that is, she have short or shaven hair, let her also be shorn. But if it is shameful to a woman to be shorn or to be shaven, let her cover her head, that is, let her not have shorn, short, or shaven hair. And the redundancy just renders it nonsensical. Long hair is not short, not shorn, not shaven. But notice what Wes is doing here. Notice what this position is doing. It's saying there are four distinct conditions you can have. Long hair, short hair, shorn, which is shorter hair, shaven, which is the shortest of all hair. But here's what's happening. If the hair is not simply short hair or long hair, if you force this distinction into verse 6, and this position does not see the two coverings, it only sees the one, at best, you're left with the hair being two different lengths at the same time. And this is why I would say that. Look at the phrase when it says, if a woman does not cover her head. If you don't understand that to be an artificial covering or an additional covering, that is, if Wes's position is if she doesn't cover her hair, that is, she has short hair, shorn hair, or shaven hair, let her also be shorn. At best, she would have two different lengths of hair at the same time. At worst, he would be saying, if she's shorn, let her also be shorn. The redundancy, again, is, well, let me put that back up there if I can get it. The redundancy of the verse is nonsensical if you don't have two coverings in that position. How much time? 1 minute. Okay. So let me summarize. Go to verses 4 through 6. A natural reading, a simple reading, and I don't think you have to understand the original language or all the technical points that either one of us have put up here. If you're just looking at verses 4, 5, and 6, what Paul is saying there is, if a man, when he's praying or prophesying, should not cover his head. He should not put anything on his head. But if a woman prays or prophesies without putting something on her head, then that's a dishonor. What she needs to do, if she is not going to put something on her head, verse 6, in addition to her hair, then she might as well cut her hair short, which is exactly against the position Wes is arguing. I think a natural reading of 4, 5, and 6 show, indeed, two covenants.
don't want to kick him while he's down or anything, you know. Though he makes some very difficult points. Because in one sense, it could seem nonsensical to read it in the way in which Michael has laid it out there. But also that's assuming that God is saying that the long hair given to her for a covering, if you don't have long hair, your hair should go ahead and just shave it off because you're not where you're supposed to be. Now, again, that's a very difficult thing for us to grasp with. How can I have this and ever be right before God? So someone has asked me, so let's say someone has short hair. They have this short hair that is not right by God, and that is what the covering is to be. What am I supposed to do with that? What do I do? Because I'm in a situation where I'm going to find myself where, when is my hair going to get long? At what point does God recognize that my hair is long? Should I not pray to God? Should I pray to God? I understand that those are really difficult questions, and I really wish I had a better answer to give you. But the truth that I see in this text is that a covering, the only specific covering that is given in the text is the long hair. And I want to go ahead and make that point that when we see how this is used and we see this idea of a covering, we will usually see the text tell us what to cover it with. So I want you to go back to your Old Testament. Again, this is the same word that is being used as to cover. So this word that Michael says is nonsensical to read as these different lengths of hair. These are the same, this is the same word, the verb form, just like we're talking about in 1 Corinthians 11, that is being used. I reference Exodus chapter 29. I want you to look at Numbers chapter 4. Let's do a quick cursory here of some of these. Look at Numbers chapter 4. Because the implication is that it has to be some kind of artificial man-made covering, is the implication that is being made by Michael that this additional thing. So verse 5. So when the camp sets out, Aaron and his sons shall go in, and they shall take down the veil of the screen and cover, there's our word, there's our verb, the ark. Notice how the verse says what they are going to cover it with. The veil, okay? Go to Numbers 22 and verse 5. Say in the same book. Numbers 22 and verse 5. So he sent messengers to Balaam, the son of Beor, and Pethor, which is near the river in the land of the sons of the people, to call him, saying, behold, a people came out of Egypt. Behold, they cover the face of the land. Notice again, specific. The people cover the land. Does that make sense? Keep going. Go to another passage that you are more well known with. Go to Isaiah, the 6th chapter. Remember that scene where Isaiah sees the Lord seated above the throne, high and exalted, and he sees the seraphim, right, who have 6 wings? I want you to notice here in Isaiah chapter 6 and verse 2, that the seraphim who stood above him, each having 6 wings, with 2, he covered, there's our word, his face. And with 2, he covered his feet. Again, our text is telling us what is the covering. Keep going. Let's see it a billion other times. Let's look at it in Isaiah 11 verse 9. Just flip a couple pages over. Isaiah 11 verse 9. They will not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain, for the Lord will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Again, you see that, right? You see that in all these texts. I want you to notice how it's not always used as a covering. I want you to notice 2 Corinthians chapter 18, or not 2 Corinthians, 2 Chronicles chapter 18. In 2 Chronicles 18, you have this battle where Ahab and Hezekiah, not Hezekiah, but Jehoshaphat, are going to battle together. And you would see in 2 Chronicles chapter 18 and verse 29, this is what you would see. The king of Israel, that would be Ahab, said to Jehoshaphat, I will disguise myself. That word is our same word, I will cover myself. Now, what this does, in one sense, this one gives a little bit of credence to what Michael says. That it is something artificial. But the text doesn't tell us what he covers himself with. It just says he will disguise himself. Does that make sense? And so, you see how this word is used that almost always the text tells us what the covering is. And so when you go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 11, if a woman prays with her head uncovered, or a man prays with his head uncovered, the only thing that you are going to find in that text that is going to tell you or necessarily imply what the covering should be is verses 13 through verse 15, where it does not nature teach you for the man that it is shameful for him to have what? Long hair. And is not long hair given to the woman for her glory? For hair is given to her, and here's our noun, for a covering. You understand how this text, the only thing that it specifies is the long hair. And this is where James, how much time do I have? 2 minutes. So let me get to this long hair. Why long hair? The word for hair, normal word for hair, is used 15 times in the New Testament. That word is not used here in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. So he's not talking about that. The word that he's using is another word in verse 15. Her hair is given to her for a covering. And so one of the writers says that this hair differs because it's not the anatomical or the physical term for hair, but rather it is designating the hair as an ornament. And how her long hair is in one sense an ornamental covering for the woman, in which she is able to show her glory and cover herself while praying. So why long hair? It's only used two times in the New Testament. It's here in this text, verse 14 with the man, verse 15 with the woman. But when you look in the Old Testament, again how the Greek is the Greek version of the Old Testament, I want you to notice Numbers chapter 6 and verse 5. How you will see oftentimes this word shows that it is dealing with long hair. So notice chapter 6 of Numbers and verse 5. All the days of his vow of separation, no razor shall pass over his head, and he shall be holy until the days are fulfilled for which he has separated himself to the Lord. And here's the phrase. And he shall let the locks of hair on his head grow long. It is implying in that there are long hairs that are being done. Notice Job chapter 1 and verse 20. That Job arose and he tore his robe and he shaved his head. That's our same word here. He shaved his head, that in the same type of breath is being used as long hair. So notice Ezekiel 44 and verse 20. How again it is normally used as long hair. And you remember how we see our Jewish friends walking around with the corners, with the long sideburns, right? That phrase is used in Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 27. And that, oh man, the bell went off. And that is considered the long hair there.
Dispel a couple of things here. First of all, if we look carefully at this word and its usage, going back to the Septuagint, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time doing that, although you can see the normal uses of terms, etc. However, to be fair, okay, if we look at every use of the term, don't begin to think, number one, that a certain word demands in every case the definite amount of covering. Let me give you a couple of things very quickly. We might go to Ezekiel and see the same term applied to clouds that hover over the land. They're covering it, but notice they're not enveloping, swallowing up the land. They're simply hovering over. I might also point out that when we're talking about a veil or a covering, and we're talking about the distinction that's made in the text, and I showed in verses 4 through 6, the distinction that's being made is from the head, from the top down to a lower point, but not necessarily covering the face. Sometimes head includes the whole thing neck up, but sometimes head does not include the face. Matthew chapter 6 is at verse 17, where he tells you to anoint your head, but wash your face. Those are two distinct things there. So be careful about reading too much into the usage of a word without considering every single usage of the term. Let's go further in the text here. Look at verses 7 as Paul draws a conclusion to what he has actually been saying. A man indeed ought not to cover his head. Very clearly, he ought not to put something on his head, and verses 4 through 6 show that. But again, if you were to go to verses 14 and 15, you can see it as well. Paul is concluding that a man ought not to cover or put something. You can call it a veil, a covering, or a thing. Put something on your head, as the woman is to do in verse 5. And again, you can see that in verse 10, when you have authority, the woman does, on her head. If you look at verse 15, and Wes has looked at verse 15 quite a bit, let's look at it. If a woman has long hair, it's a glory to her. Her hair is given to her for a covering. I noticed that Wes began the discussion in his first speech by saying it is a covering. That's exactly right. It is not the covering under discussion, but it is a covering. In fact, it's one of two. Her hair is given to her for a covering. A literal translation. If a woman wears long hair, and literally the term for long hair here is a word that means she wears locks or tresses, or as lexicographers point out, her hair is grown out to the point that she could. But that process of growing out her hair renders her hair longer every second she lives as before. Now here's the point to that. The question was asked, what if you're baptized and you have very short, even shaven hair? The moment you start growing it out, is to appeal to this passage for longer hair, and you will get it to the point of tresses or locks, which is literally what this means. Now, you don't have to put it in curls or ringlets or anything like that, but length that it could be done with that. That's what Paul is saying is a covering. The natural understanding, then, in verses 14 and 15, it's a shame for a man to have long hair. How long is long? Well, long enough to do the thing like locks or tresses, or like I used to do with the ponytail on your head. But if a woman wears long hair, locks or tresses, or has it that long, it's a glory. And that long hair, as opposed to the man, instead, is given to her for a covering. Okay. It's a covering. It's one of two under discussion. It is not the same word as Wes pointed out from the earlier part of the discussion, verses 4 through 6, for example. It is a different word. It does mean something that, not the normal word for veil or covering, as he pointed out correctly, but something thrown or cast around. In fact, it is even a cognate form of the word parable, if you can believe that. But something you cast or throw around. Now, let me illustrate with this picture. What we're talking about are two coverings. We're talking about in verses 5 and 6, again in verse 10, again in verse 13, and with the man, what he's not to do in verses 4 and 7. We are talking about something put on the head. Notice that. Something put on the head from the top that comes down to a lower point. And it must satisfy all these descriptions. Something, a sign of authority for the woman, but something on the head, put on the head or to the head, as it says, upon her head. It covers. It comes down from a higher point to a lower point on the head. It is also a covering, in addition to the hair. must satisfy, being an additional or also, and in addition to the natural one of the hair. Now let's look at the other covering in this picture, her long hair. It's a natural veil or covering. Not the normal word for covering, but something cast around. Literally around her neck, her shoulders. You can see that that is the case here. Or I might indicate with arrows like this. It is long enough that if pulled to its length, could be cast around her neck or her shoulder. How much time do you have? 3 minutes. Perfect. And it's got to satisfy the things that are said. It is a natural veil or covering. Does not even nature itself teach you, etc., etc.? A natural veil or covering, as opposed to just something you're putting on your head. And it's long enough to wear it in locks or tresses. Doesn't mean you have to. You can wrap it up in a bun or whatever you want to do. But it's hair, like I said, that the Thayer and others point out, is grown out. And it gets to that point of being able to do that with the hair. It is a veil or a covering because it is of the length to be thrown or cast around or long enough to do so as a cloak would be, which does cover, not your whole body, not your face, but a cloak or a mantle or a coat. It's even translated sometimes in certain places. It can be thrown about. Now, I leave Wes with several questions that I think I've made the point throughout to say. If only one covering is intended, let's just say that Wes is right and only one, the hair, is the covering. Why make the argument, as Paul does, and why include a term like also or and? Why not simplify the discussion by saying, and you could, a man must wear short hair and a woman's hair must be long. Say it in any way you want to say it, but say it that simply. And here are the reasons why, and list those things that Paul does in 1 Corinthians 11. For that matter, why these two different words or phrases? Why go to such pains to use prepositional phrases and a verb form of a word he could have easily stuck a noun in there? Why stick that noun in verse 15 when he could have used, and leave it only there, when he could have in verses 4 through 6 used the verb form, or participial form? In other words, you don't have to change words if you don't mean something in addition. You can leave it the same word and everybody looks at it and says, oh, I see it. It could be overly simplified, but Paul seems to make it overly difficult if he doesn't mean two different covers. And since short or long hair is worn at all times, whatever the length of my hair is, I wear it every day. And if it's worn at all times, why even give the stipulation of when you're praying or prophesying if this is not something that's to be done in addition to what's naturally on your head? Either short hair for the man or long hair for the woman. It makes no sense. And that's why I say the redundancy renders it just nonsensical. Paul is arguing for two separate and distinct coverings, and the natural reading of the passage shows that.
So Michael has the questions for me. The also is a tough one. In fact, the also is the toughest one. Because if I'm going to believe that a person has to repent and be baptized, that is something that I have to answer. What I don't know is how that word is used all the time, if that word has to be in addition to, or if it sometimes can be used a little different than that. I'm no Greek scholar. I'm no Greek elementary student. I am no Greek nothing. I am using arguments that brethren use to go through and defend the position that long hair is for the covering. So I didn't look at that particular thing or know how that is used off the top of my head. So I don't have a great answer for that. What I do have a question about is Michael just said that verse 7, a man ought not put something on his head, is the idea that he had that. But he ought, and I read that as someone ought not have it on their head. And I would ask the question, why can't what he's not supposed to have on his head be long hair? Why does it have to be that additional? I understand that the also is probably the answer that he is going to give, but that would be one of the big questions that I would have in regards to that. Again, as I sum up my position is not that it doesn't matter if a woman prays with head covered or uncovered. What I'm arguing is that a woman must pray to God with her head covered, and a man must pray or prophesy without his head covered. And I'm arguing from this text that the covering is the long hair that is given to woman. So when a woman prays, she ought to have long hair. When a man prays, he ought not have long hair. That is what I am arguing for this evening.
Say to people who don't believe in being baptized, and means and. And I think that's what you see there. Let me answer the question of the heart of one, and that is from verse 7. And if you will look on this, what I've got up here, from verse 5, if you look at the every woman praying or prophesying with her head uncovered, if you notice I set down, if you look at the bottom part of the slide, grammatically with her head uncovered, a compound word that literally means something that is put on or to her head. That's why I said put on. And if you look in verse 7, and you can check this or anyone else can check this, if you look at verse 7, it's the exact same phraseology, that same compound word with one exception. In verse 5, it has the prefix that means not or non or whatever. It negates it. In verse 7, it's dropped that prefix, the little a or alpha. And all it simply is the same compound word in this sense, verse 5, with her head uncovered, or something put on or to her head. Verse 7, something that is put on or to his head. She needs to be covered, he does not. She needs to put something on or to her head, he needs to not put something. That's the main reason why, from that terminology, I'm saying an additional, artificial, man-made something that's being put on the head. I assume that's about time, right? All right. Thank you very much. And with that, let me just simply say, appreciate the debate, appreciate your attention, and always enjoy this because Wes does a great job in preparing for these, and I appreciate it. All right.
It's also, so if you've been here the last 2 weeks or you're just here tonight, you understand that this is a passage that we've not taught on very frequently from the pulpit. And so someone has actually asked me about that recently. Like, why haven't we preached on this? You can see how difficult a topic this is to preach on and discuss. It's a really difficult topic. And thankfully, Michael came up with these ideas of having these debates almost 2 years ago that he had to convince me about. And this is one of those topics that I think we've been building towards getting to. We're actually something that most of us sitting across from each other either disagree with someone else in the room on, or we agree with other people on in the room. And there is not a divide of fellowship or brotherhood or anything like that, but where we just don't agree on what the passage is teaching. Virtually all of us agree on that Acts 2:38 and that 1 Peter 3:21, baptism now saves you. But we don't all black and white understand 1 Corinthians chapter 11. And I imagine that even after these two nights, we may have more questions than what we had even before coming in, because now we understand that it's even more complicated and more difficult than what we have dumbed it down to be. And that just goes to show how important to me, or it shows me how important it is to take the time for myself to try to understand what God would have me to do. See, we spent so much time where we come to church and we're fed everything, and what needs to be taught and what needs to be said is what the preacher decides or what the elders decide, and we expect them to feed us every single thing. That is our job, Acts 20. That we should teach the whole counsel of God. But if we come 52 times a year, and we come at 11 a.m., and we come at 4 p.m., that's 104 times. Can we teach literally the entire counsel of God in that time period? It just doesn't work that way, does it? And so oftentimes when this teaching takes place, it's often done because someone's been reading through 1 Corinthians 11 and they don't know what 1 Corinthians 11 is saying. That, because that comes. But oftentimes we are so, I use the term, I know what I believe about this, or I don't know what I believe about this, so I'm not even going to look into this. When clearly what we need to understand is that this is one of those passages, yeah, we might not deal with it a lot, but this is one of those passages that God just didn't throw in there so we could argue over it and we could have debates over it. This is something that God is saying is a shame for us to do if we do it incorrectly. I think that should motivate us and myself to be more cautious with the things that I just think are trivial and don't matter. That to God, it does very much matter on this. I'll be honest, I personally still don't know 100% what I think. And so if you ask me today, you put a gun to my head, I would say I plead the fifth. I honestly don't know. Michael asked some really good questions that I have to think about and I have to answer. That's somewhat between me and God as I try to understand this, as you try to understand this. But let's not cop out and say it doesn't matter or it's too hard. Let's cop out and say, I don't know, but I'm going to try to get a little more solid behind this. You understand what I'm saying? I think we can come away with that. It's a good thing to be able to talk about difficult things with brethren. I know we've gone over a little bit tonight, but if you got more questions, ask Michael. I am out of this. Now I'm back to the associate. No, you can ask me too, but do ask Michael instead of me. But that's okay. So, I don't know if there's anyone in the audience that is ready to give their life to God because they know what they need to do to have their sins washed away and taken away. But if there is someone here that is ready to do that, or there's someone here this evening that needs the prayers of the congregation in some way, now would be the time to come as we stand and as we sing.